This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Hi, I'm Greg Watson, and welcome to this week's show of Property Matters here on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio. Te reo, irirangi o ngā tangata o Manawatu. It's lovely having your company today. We're going to have a little bit of talk today about rents and house prices in the regions and what they're doing, what's happening there. That will lead us on to a range of things, really. We're going to talk a little bit about how many Kiwis are falling behind on mortgage repayments, according to the Reserve Bank. We're going to look at Sir Richard Hadley's amazing house. Not literally look at, we're going to talk about, and I'll try to describe with beautiful verbal imagery the house, or I might just redirect you to the pictures which are online. It's quite an interesting article. We will also look at the Coalition government putting aside the bill for the regulation of the property management industry. That sounds a little boring, but actually it's very important and very interesting. As well as that, we're going to have a look at 13 things you can use dishwashing liquid to clean in your house. And some of them are like really surprisingly effective. So we'll share that with you shortly. So let's start off today with looking at the regions where property prices are still rising. So the national average asking price has barely changed in the year to April, and it's down 0.6% to $869,000 for your national average asking price. Asking prices are not necessarily the same as selling prices. Some areas like Central Otago Lakes District and the West Coast saw prices increase by more than 15%. They also say that overall, increasing living costs and stubbornly high interest rates have led to cooling demand for property. So there are two regions that have shown some pretty good, those West Coast and Central South Island there. However, on a regional level, the average asking prices are relatively stable, with 12 of the 19 regions recording a year-on-year change of less than 5% up or down. So a sort of a situation here where you'd have to wonder, are they going to start going up again? Well, really, what's going to happen next? Now, this article mainly focuses on the areas that have gone up high. So let's have a look here with some general real estate information. Nationally, searches per listing were down 10.4%, so a little bit less activity than a year ago. Engagements per listing, that is people that actually click and have a look through and all that sort of stuff online, have decreased 7.5% year on year. And regionally, the searches per listing were down in most of the regions. So the cooling in buyer interest is a significant shift, as most regions had seen year-on-year growth in demand so far this year. So they feel the – I just want to make sure I quote the right person here when they're talking about the where is he? Oh, Sarah Wood, sorry, from realestate.co.nz is the lady. I'm really sorry about that. Just blanked out a few names there. Sarah Wood, yeah. So she's been saying that the in response to the recession, the buyers being understandably cautious. There are also higher interest rates are playing a part. And around 60% of New Zealand's existing mortgages are up for renewal in the next 12 months. Those who fixed 2 years ago might soon move from interest rates of around 3% to 7%, Wood said. That's likely pulling liquidity from the market and dampening demand. So there are some things that will affect the market positively. However, the government has indicated that most of those won't come in until the beginning of next year. We're talking about things like the ability to lend easier for first home buyers. The taxes and so forth, the effects of those coming off for landlords will, and bright line test changes will mean that there's a little bit more activity as the year goes on, but just at the moment it's fallen down. So this article from Esther Taunton on Stuff says more Kiwis falling behind on mortgage payments, says Reserve Bank. Households that borrowed at a high debt-to-income ratio and those aged 30 to 50 are feeling the financial pressure more keenly. A predicted increase in unemployment is expected to make the situation worse. More homeowners are falling behind on mortgage repayments as cost of living pressures and higher interest rates take a toll, according to the Reserve Bank. And a predicted increase in unemployment is expected to make the situation worse. The central bank published its latest financial stability report, and that looks at risks to the country's financial system just last Wednesday. It showed the share of mortgage lending more than 30 days in arrears had risen above the 2020 peak, which was a small but growing share of 0.5%. It's gone past the peak, but 0.5% is more than 90 days past due. A similar trend was seen in mortgage lending categorised as in hardship, where borrowers have needed to change their debt repayments to keep up with their obligations. Most mortgage borrowers have now repriced onto higher interest rates as expected, with rising nominal incomes helping many households navigate this transition, Deputy Governor Christian Hawkesby said. It's interesting because that was contradicted slightly. Not really, but they also said earlier in the article that 60% are going to be going up this year. It does say that some are doing it tough and reducing their spending or extending their repayment timelines in order to make ends meet, and a number of households are also facing heightened job uncertainty. Some groups of borrowers were feeling the effects of higher interest rates more keenly than others, the bank said, and that included households that had borrowed at high debt-to-income ratio, or where they tend to have larger loans. So arrears are expected to rise as some borrowers continue to roll on to even higher mortgage rates, albeit with bulk of the transition already complete. The impact of higher debt servicing costs is also only fully realised after some time, and a strained borrower exhausts savings and other buffers. So it said banks are expecting non-performing loans to increase to 0.7% by the end of the year, about half of what it was during the global financial crisis. However, on average, borrowers still had capacity to handle high debt servicing costs. Luckily, the banks, when they are deciding on their lending, build in the possibility, build into their calculations, possibility that rates might go up and to see whether people can manage that. An option for borrowers in financial stress is to pay only the interest costs and stop principal repayments. Over the past year, the share of interest-only mortgages has remained flat at historically low levels. So in other words, you can sort of give yourself a little bit of a break, so to speak. I think I did this with some properties in COVID, where it halved what I was needing to pay for a period of time. In other words, I was just paying the interest, not the principal, to tide me through. However, despite all of that, a small portion of borrowers will still have few options available and are at risk of default. The bank said robust labour market conditions and strong nominal wage growth had supported borrowers over recent years. In general, if a mortgage holder still has a job, they can find ways to manage the repayments. But with most economic forecasters expecting the unemployment rate to increase over the next year, a softer labour market is likely to lead to an increase in arrears. So that's just interesting there to see that perspective as well. Not the world's best news here on Stuff for renters. It says rents at an all-time high, according to a Trade Me index. Properties in the website's rental index have risen by an average of $50 in the last year, bringing the national median rental price to $650 per week. While it's not the biggest annual increase we've ever seen, it's unusual to see it this high in March, Trade Me property sales director Gavin Lloyd said in a statement. He says, we'd normally expect to see the market cool slightly as we exit summer and start heading into the cooler months. He said the increase amounted to an extra $2,600 per year for most New Zealanders. The steepest increase was in the Manawatu Wanganui region, which was up 10% to $550 per week. So right here, Manawatu Wanganui rents are up 10%. That's a big shift. In the same period, rentals in Wellington didn't shift at all and remained at $650 per week. Auckland's up 6.2% and remains the most expensive city with an average weekly rent of $690. Southland saw a 9.3% increase. So there is talk about what causes the increases. We've talked about it a number of times on this show. The popular media narrative is that landlords are greedy is the reason why rents go up. The largest factor on why rents increase is supply and demand. In other words, it's if there's less homes available, people will pay a bit more to get a home. And this works for any supply and demand situation. If you think of fruit and veggies and that sort of stuff, try buying summer vegetables in wintertime or winter vegetables in summertime, and you're paying a premium because there just isn't that much around. Same applies for housing. The biggest factor is that there are simply not enough places for people to live. And we will touch back on this shortly when we talk about the article about the Bill for Regulation of Property Management being moved aside for the time being. The difficulties with these rents is that until there is more properties available and the supply and demand factor will still very much be in the equation. The narratives that talk about owners putting up rents because they have rising costs and that sort of thing has some truth to it, but actually rental amounts will only ever go as high as what tenants are prepared to pay, and that is supply and demand. I mentioned that I'd talk a little bit about Sir Richard Hadley's Canterbury Golf Course home. It was passed in recently at auction. This article from May the 2nd by Kylie Klein-Nixon on Stuff has some pictures, etc. So while this might not affect your day-to-day life, it's quite interesting. I was surprised how cheap the rating value was. So Sir Richard Hadley's home of 14 years in Pegasus, north of Christchurch, has been passed in an auction. Auctioneer Connor Patton called for opening bids at 1:30pm on Thursday, March 2nd, but none were offered. The sale passed in a few minutes later. Prior to the auction, listing agent Anna Bray said they were not likely to have any serious buyers in the room, but we have had conditional interest, in other words, people that can buy subject to certain conditions. So it's actually a 427-metre four-bedroom home, which Hadley shares with his wife, Lady Diane. It sits on a 2,131 square metre section, gently rolls to a lake, down to a lake in Pegasus, has a capital value of $1.8 million on homes.co.nz. The estimated selling price will be between 1.98 and 2.05. The home comes with a slew of chattels, including a golf cart. It sits opposite the Pegasus Golf Club, a Parkland-style 18-hole championship golf course. So there's some pictures here. It looks really nice indeed. It also has a second minor dwelling where Hadley's son and grandchildren stay when they visited. So good luck to them with the sale. They've got a photo here of it. It looks fairly magnificent in that it's got near the shores of a lake. It's got the house reflecting in it. It's got beautiful sunsets. It's got trees that have lights lighting them up. Looks like a really nice place to live. And that's a home I'd certainly want to go and have a look at if I was in that neck of the woods. Albeit, I'm not a golfer, so therefore that's probably if you're a golfer and keen to play golf most days, wow, that would be pretty cool. So just announced in the last few days at the time of this recording was that the regulation or the bill to regulate property managers has had some flack. So best if I just read this one out to you. This is the article from Stuff from Nona Pelletier of Radio New Zealand. It says, renters and realtors upset at scrapping of bill to regulate property managers. So renters and realtors are upset with the government decision to scrap a bill meant to regulate property managers over concerns about unethical and unlawful behaviours. They say the current state of the property management sector lacked any minimum standards or basic checks and balances to protect tenants and landlords. However, Housing Minister Chris Bishop told Parliament's Social Services and Regulations Committee to stop considering the bill this week, indicating the cost-benefit analysis was marginal and uncertain. The bill would have established a regulatory regime for property managers, including minimum entry requirements, professional standards of practice, and a complaints and disciplinary process. Renters United spokesperson Luke Somerville told Radio New Zealand's Morning Report the current situation was akin to the Wild West, leaving renters exposed to rogue operators. Real Estate Institute Chief Executive Jen Baird said the industry was extremely disappointed with the decision to scrap the bill. In an industry where a modest person property management business can oversee assets totaling $60 million in retirement savings, it's inconceivable that such a significant sector remains unregulated, said Baird. No other profession handling assets of this magnitude operates without oversight in New Zealand. However, Bishop said in a statement that regulation was not the answer. Adding more regulation to the rental property market isn't the way to open up more housing supply, he said. Which is interesting. I'll just read that again because they're two unrelated things. Adding more regulation to the rental property market isn't the way to open up more housing supply. But the next part he says is important to show why this is being moved aside. It says, indeed, we need our officials working on policies that will make real difference to improving housing supply, such as our sensible changes to the Residential Tenancies Act, which will encourage more landlords into the market and apply downward pressure to rents. And again, it's funny because I've just read the article further. It says, however, Baird said the housing crisis was a separate issue. That's the REINZ. She says, currently there are no minimum standards requiring residential property managers to ensure they're up to speed on landlord and tenant laws, she says. There is no legal requirement for property managers to hold insurance. There are no checks and balances to ensure tenant bonds and landlord's rent monies are protected in an independent trust account. Rent and bond fraud is not uncommon. Having no safeguards for client funds puts landlords and tenants at risk. Baird said, the Real Estate Institute of New Zealand had advocated for regulation for more than 5 years and would not give up its fight. So I've just got a few thoughts on this article, and so I thought I'd just share those. One is that it's virtually unbelievable that they could remove this from consideration because for some very good reasons they're mentioned in the article. It says that they want to concentrate on making more housing available, in addressing the housing shortage. Let me just find those words there if I can. He said that adding more regulation to the rental property market isn't the way to open up more housing supply. So one would assume that he's drawing a bow there, which I'll draw. I'm not saying this is what he's saying, but what he might be saying is that if you add more regulation to the rental property market, the rents may go up or the costs to landlords may be more, which might discourage more people from investing in property. That's a long bow to draw there. Or there could be another situation here. He said, we need our officials working on policies that make a real difference to improving housing supply, such as the changes to the Act, which says to me it's a priority issue, that maybe they haven't got enough people to do the work. You can say what you like about the redundancies of government staff. That's a completely different issue. But what he could be saying is, with the staff that we have to make the biggest effect, we feel that we should be doing changing the Residential Tenancies Act to get more people buying property, investing, building property, etc. for rent. So they are related only in so much as those two thoughts there, so far as I can tell, that either they haven't got the person power to handle all of it at the moment, so they're putting the regulation of property managers aside, or regulating property managers by default will add on costs to landlords, which would then make it less appealing to be a landlord. If I'm off on a tangent there and I've gone on slightly the wrong path, please let me know. Just go on to NPR, manawatupeoplesradio.nz, find my show, and you pop a comment in there. I'm always interested to hear from you. So with regards regulation, it is something that I believe is key. I've said on the show before, although I haven't mentioned it for a little while now, I believe that the bill in its current form, while it would be good, is not really good enough. A bill and eventually law that would regulate the property management industry only covers property management industry practitioners and doesn't cover a wide range of other areas that where tenants are experiencing problems. In the media, they're often reporting cases of terrible landlords doing terrible things, and they're not often property management companies at all. And what I've said before is, yes, regulate the property management industry. Great idea, have really good education, good people, background checks, character tests, trust accounts, safeguards, all of that's wonderful, but there should be another tier. So that could be the top tier. The second tier, I believe, should be that any landlord renting out a residential property in this country needs some basic education on what they can do and what they can't do, because a lot of these situations that arise where tenants have terrible situations is either because a landlord doesn't understand the consequences of their action or just completely disregards the law. And in many cases, and this is my opinion, that landlords who are from overseas originally but are now living in New Zealand owning property may not even know what the laws are in New Zealand and may even apply laws from their home countries. For example, in America, you can create a contract, a United States of America that is, where if, as long as both parties agree, they have to abide. In parts of Asia, the landlord has all of the power. All of the power. It's completely one-sided. And so they feel that they have a risk of feeling that they still have that ability to run roughshod over tenants. So my little, I guess, soapbox is to say, yes, regulate property managers. It's crazy not to. But let's up the game for all landlords, because they're running a rental property as a business, and there should be some of those safeguards brought in. Anyway, we'll move on from that to the highly exciting article that I've been waiting for, 13 things you can clean with dishwashing liquid other than dishes. This article on Stuff is May the 1st by Rachel Gavin. If you wanted to refer to it later, I'm just going to go through it fairly quickly. But she says there's one cleaning product that beats all others for versatility and price, so much that you could toss out most of your other sprays and still clean your house. And the standout product is also one of the most simple, dishwashing liquid. Also known as dish soap and detergent, there is so much more you can do with it than just wash up your dishes. And you can find it in supermarkets for less than $2 for store brands, and only a little more for big name brands. And since that most dishwashing liquids are concentrated, you only need a very small amount per cleaning task, so you can get a lot of use for that couple of dollars. She says you can even combine it with vinegar for a powerful DIY cleaner that can be added to a spray bottle or refillable dish wand. Love those refillable dish wands. So, just what can you clean with this powerhouse cleaning product? Here are all the possibilities they found. First one is floors. A 2022 review of floor cleaners by Consumer Group Choice found most were no better than plain water for just cleaning the floor, so it doesn't recommend the product at all. But instead, just drizzle a little dishwashing liquid into your mop bucket, fill with hot water for an effective cleaner that will leave your floors sparkling. Shower screens. Oh, man. Oh, I'm just imagining my shower screen at the moment. I won't describe it, but it needs this. It says soap scum and hard water stains make shower glass look foggy, making for a less than relaxing shower. You can fix that with a little dish soap on a gentle scourer. Wet the scourer to get a lather and then scrub all over. Rinse off the soapy water and use a squeegee to remove the excess water. I'm going to give that a go. But in the bathroom, the shower isn't the only thing you can clean with dishwashing liquid. Most of the bathroom can be too, from the vanity to the bath, tiles, even the toilet. Dust first and use hot soapy water for best results. Some surfaces sometimes need a rinse or a wipe down to dry off. Windows and mirrors, believe it or not. Forgo your window cleaning spray for both windows and mirrors and use a cloth and soapy water to clean. Follow that up with squeegee for a streak-free finish. Here's one I wouldn't have thought of, clothing stains. Dish soap typically contains degreaser, so it means it can get oil off your pots and pans. It also means it can come in handy for things like oil stains. You pre-treat the stain by applying a drop or two of detergent, rub it with your fingers, leave it for 5-10 minutes and wash as normal. Another one is driveway stains. That's degreasers. The degreasers in the dishwashing liquid will also work on oil stains in the garage or driveway. Drizzle some on the stain, scrub, and then rinse. Boy, can't wait to try that one out. Kitchen sink, that is steel. For a daily clean, wipe down with just soapy water is fine, or an antibacterial spray if you prefer, but for a really satisfying polish, drizzle a little dishwashing liquid across the sink and scatter bicarb soda on top. Give it a good scrub with steel wool before rinsing off with water and polishing with the microfiber cloth. Imagine you could see your face in that after that. Kitchen cupboards. All greasy, grimy kitchen cupboards and shelves need is hot soapy water for a good clean. You can make a bowl of soapy water to dip your cloth into for a quick clean. Just add a drop of dish soap and wet your cloth and wipe away. Now, stone benchtops, there's plenty of things that you shouldn't use to clean your stone benchtops. Not sure if you're aware, things like bleach, vinegar, bicarb soda. But what you can clean it with, though, is dishwashing liquid. An easy way to clean the surface regularly is to make your own spray with detergent and water, give the bench a spritz or two, and wipe. Now, a pro tip, after wiping your bench, crouch down to eye level to check the surface is clean, and from that position you'll be able to see all the crumbs you might have missed. Another one here, smelly drains. Kitchen sinks can get pretty stinky with everything that goes down them after washing up. So drizzle a little dishwashing liquid down the sink hole, follow with hot water. Some people use boiling waters, but plumbers don't really recommend that if you've got plastic pipes, of course. The degreaser action of the soap will help break down any grease and oil that has built up inside the drain and around the plug hole, and therefore eliminating the smell. Now, one of the most tedious things to clean in the house is are blinds, and it takes a long time. The process is quite simple. Just dust first, wash with warm soapy water and a cloth. Outdoor furniture, if you haven't given them a wipe for a while, you'll be surprised how good it looks after a wash of dishwashing liquid and water. You probably need to change cloths frequently because of the level of dirt that builds up on the items, but that's okay. It's better than wiping the dirt all around. You can add a little bit of vinegar to the bucket of soapy water if you need a more heavy-duty clean. Finally, jewellery. For most jewellery, you can use a few drops of dishwashing liquid and warm water, soak for about 5 minutes, and then rinse. If it needs more attention, try a very soft toothbrush and give a light scrub. Finish with a buff and polish using a soft cloth. So there we go. The Humble Dishwashing Liquid. I'm going to definitely try some of those myself. Again, let me know in the comments on mpr.nz by the radio show Property Matters. If you do try any, if you find that they work, I'll try and do the same. And give that a go, save some money. Well, that's all that we've got time for this week on Property Matters. It's been a lot of fun having you here on Manawatū People's Radio, Te Reo Irirangi o Ngā Tangata o Manawatū. So I'm Greg Watson. You can find this also where all good podcasts are found. Just search Greg Watson and Property Matters. So have a great week. We'll catch up with you in a week's time.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.